Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om ajnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha nama shreshtam manamapi shachiputramatra swarupam rupam tasya agrajam arupurim matarim goshtavatim radha kundam girivaramaho radhika madhavasham prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurum tam natosmi vandeham shri guru shri atav padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunatan vitam tam sajivam sadvaitam savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vitamscha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Yesterday I spoke about how at death tirthas there's an atmosphere is created of vairagya, of detachment from this world, and because Varanasi is the city in all of India which is the most famous for going to die at, and there's so much death is in the atmosphere, so it's a natural place for people who want to renounce. They may go there. Of course, another favorite destination of those who want to renounce is the Himalayas, because it's far away from the Shangshara Fuka, Bhaktivinoda describes this tumult of the of materialistic life. But there's always been a place, Kashi, we may say, that's the city of light for those who desire to merge into the light and who who for that purpose perform very who live as sannyasis, leading a very austere life, that becomes that's a place for them. But also another feature of the city of light is the darkness of ignorance of people. One response to death is to become renounced. Another response is to think, hey, let's enjoy while we can. The goats, while waiting to be slaughtered, enjoying sex. So, although generally Kashi is famous as a city of renunciation, but it's also for centuries been a city of enjoyment, of fine culture, Banarsi Pan. Ever heard of that? Yeah, everyone in North India. You also heard of it? No. In North India, it's famous. It's supposed to be very... just the best. And it's famous also for very expensive saris. How much do you want to spend? You can spend any amount. It depends on how much you want to spend. Wedding saris. Wedding is just about the opposite of renunciation, right? Wedding means you're getting tied up, literally. And renunciation is to be free from bandhan, to be free from being tied up. And fine culture. Oh, another thing is famous for is aloo tikki, right? Yeah, Eastman, he knows that. You can get aloo tikki anywhere, but it's famous especially in Varanasi. So. And fine life, religious culture, not necessarily spirit, but enjoy Ramcharitmanas performances with tabla, and it's very nice. And if you really want to get serious about material enjoyment, then it's also been famous for centuries as a place of illicit sex. And up to the present day, it has, so I'm told, I haven't visited there, the largest red light district in Asia. Everything's big in India, right? So it should have the biggest, the most highly spiritual and the most degraded materialism also. It's all there, organized. Just a thought, a side thought about death and leaving this world. The sadhus, they leave this world and then the place where they leave, it becomes a place of pilgrimage, or their samadhi, their form is interred, and people come and treat it as another place of pilgrimage. But we don't find that the Supreme Lord ever leaves any form behind. Ramachandra entered the river, no form left behind. Krishna went up to the spiritual world. He left a false form, but in his original false form that appeared to be shot by an arrow. Balaram manifested the form of Ananta and entered into that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are different theories. The ones that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur accepts. Well, one is that he entered the sea and was not seen again. Others I don't want to say because they're atheistic and horrible. Or some say he entered Jagannath. But he entered Gopinath, the deity of Gopinath, at the Jameshwara Tota, the seashore near to the Shiva temple, Jameshwara. And if you pay the pujari there, you can see the crack in the knee of Gopinath, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered. So that's just a thought. Okay, on to different kinds of holy places. I'll start with Shaiva Kshetras. I prefer to call Kshetra rather than Tirtha. Tirtha, yes, but where do you cross to? It's the place of Lord Shiva. But actually, Tirtha is one of the names of Shiva also. We'll find in Vishnu Sahasranam several names which are generally names of Shiva. And the very name Shiva itself means auspicious. So that's suitable for Vishnu. Shambhu, Shankara, all the Shankara simply means one who makes auspiciousness, or who has auspiciousness in his hand for blessing. So these all this, so in the Linga Purana, there's the Shiva Purana and the Linga Purana. So the 650th name of Shiva given there is Tirtha. So you can cross over. The only thing is, unless you really cross over far, far away, far beyond the Viraja, the river we have to cross, Viraja, there's no, to the place beyond Raja, Rajoguna, that which gives rise to material enjoyment, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajoguna Samudbhavaha. Far beyond that, we have to go. Not just enter the light, but to go beyond the light into the Vaikuntha world, and then up, up, up. And Gaurya Vaishnavas, of course, by the grace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they go, they aim to go even the far beyond Viraja Pare Paravyoma Dham. This beyond the Viraja is the Paravyoma. And then they go up and up and up and up and come to the ultimate level of the Absolute Truth, which is Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, black tamal. The highest level of the Absolute Truth is a black tamal tree surrounded by a golden vine, entwined by a golden vine. That's it. That's Krishna and Radha. So Shiva places are there. I'll just say briefly, otherwise could spend many lifetimes contemplating Shiva Tirthas, but we're not so much interested. We offer respect. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. But the reason why people worship Shiva in this world is not the aim of the Vaishnavas. It's a different mood, a different feeling. So Lord Shiva, they're famous as, there are 12 jyotirlingas, effulgent lingas, linga in this sense meaning phallus, penis, and there are upalingas also. Not necessarily dependent on the size of the linga as we see it, because ultimately that is unlimited anyway. There's several stories in the Puranas of Brahma and Vishnu arguing who is greatest, and then Lord Shiva appears and says, see if you can find the limit. And Brahma goes up on his swan carrier, can't find it, and Vishnu goes down as Varaha and can't find it, and neither up nor down. So the stories are there like that in the Puranas. So Lord Shiva, these jyotirlingas, they're considered especially important places of Shiva worship. I'll just go through them. Somnath in Saurashtra, Gujarat. Malikarjuna on Sri Shaila. Mahakala at Ujjain. Omkareshwara on the Narmada. Kedar in the Himalayas. Bhima Sankara in Maharashtra. Vishveshwara, Vishwanath at Varanasi. Triambak on the Godavari near Nashik. Vaidyanath near Deoga in, I believe it's still in Bihar, Santal Pargana. Nageshwara near Dwaraka. Rameshwaram, you all know where that is. And the 12th one, there are different versions. One says Grishneshwara near Daulatabad, also Maharashtra. Then Some say Kaitaveshra, Haridwar, or Gautamesh, no location given, although I suspect that might be the same as Triambakeshvara, because that pastime of Triambakeshvara appearing is connected with Gautam, Gautam Rishi. And there are also the five Bhutalingas, who they represent different of the five elements. They're all in South India. Ekambareshvara at Kanchi is earth. Kalahasti, water. That's near to Tirupati, you know. Jambukeshvara, near Mysuru, air. Arunachala, Tiruvannamalai, fire. And Chidambaram, ether. Okay, so briefly, I said it would be brief. Then I'll move on to Shakti Pitas. Now, these are not really Tirthas, and I'll explain why. But I said I wouldn't go into Shiva so much, but I will go into Shakti a bit. I'll discuss this a bit more, because I believe within our ISKCON or Gauriya Vaishnava diaspora, the Shiva Tattva is fairly well known. And Shiva holy places are well known. Let me see, out of these 12 places of Shiva, how many I visited? Somnath one, Malikarjuna, Mahakal, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, I visited 8 of them with 8 of the 12. So it's about the Shakti cult. One thing, it's often quite secretive, and there's a reason. There are reasons for that also, because if not illegal, some of the things they do, they're highly antisocial and not done by people who not acceptable by civilized society. So it's can be quite secretive. So I'll just talk a little bit about this. Shakti appears in many forms. I'll just discuss two of them. Chamunda, her temple is there at Mysuru. The Chamundeshwari is the deity of the Mysore kings. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur visited there. I haven't visited there. I've been to Mysore a few times, but I didn't take the time to go there. Although I went to just close by there is Sri Rangapatanam, the first of the Ranganath temples, first of the three on the Kaveri. So Chamunda, she appears in a black or red form, and she has a garland of heads, fresh cut. That's her garland. Or sometimes she has a garland of skulls. Just variety, not all the same all the time. Sometimes she has 4 hands, sometimes 8, sometimes 10, sometimes 12. She has a damru and a trishul, like Lord Shiva, a sword, a snake, Katvanga, the mace with the skull on it, a thunderbolt. She carries a severed head also, and a cup for drinking wine, or sometimes she holds a skull for drinking blood from. She either stands or sits on a corpse of a man. And she's decorated with bones, skulls, and snakes. She has a yajnopavita for all those women who want to have a yajnopavita. You can hear this. But it's made of skulls. Her hair, jata, this matted hair, is tied up, neatly tied up, with snakes, and has some ornaments of, you guessed, skulls. And she has her associates, the pretas, the dakinis, the female kind of creatures who people want to protect themselves against. We find in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Nimai was so called to protect him from the dakinis, the female blood-sucking spirits who kill babies. She's surrounded by, she has accompanying her skeletons who move around, and ghosts and jackals, because there's a lot of blood and jackals like that. And jackals, they eat the flesh of the corpses who she stands on. Sometimes the jackals and her companions, they're drinking blood which spills over from the skull, or the blood dripping from the severed head. Drinking blood is, well, especially the saptamatrikas or ashtamatrikas, they're manifestations of the goddess in her terrible aspect. Or sometimes they're described as companions of her. Most gods in Vedic culture, and we're really getting to the bottom level of Vedic culture here, but it's all within the Vedic culture. The goddesses, they're usually shown as young women. Even Kali, who is a terrible form, Gaura Rupa, she has a young form with full, firm breasts and red lips, very red lips. And it's not just from the blood that she's... Well, she doesn't herself drink it. But Chamunda is a form of Kali who is very old. She appears as an old woman. She is projecting destruction, death, fear, all these things. Okay, that's a brief description of her. Not the usual kind of thing we talk about in the morning class. Let's go on a little bit to Chinnamasta, which literally means cut head. And whose head did she cut? She has a chopper in her hand. Her own head. So she doesn't have she's holding her head in one hand, and there are three squirts of blood coming out of her severed neck. And there are two attendants, one on one side drinks one spurt of blood, another drinks another stream, and her own cut head drinks another one. And the rest of the description is similar to Chamunda. You get the idea. I didn't go on. It's quite horrible. You get the idea. But it's meant for that. Meant to be horrible. People come to worship these forms knowing that Shakti, her very name Shakti, she's very powerful. She can do this to you. Better worship her so you don't get this kind of thing done to you. And the holy places, as they're called, connected with the with Shakti, with the Shakta cult. Those who worship Shakti are called Shaktas. They're called holy places, but they're rather unholy. Many of them have cremation grounds. There's death all around. The killing of goats and chickens is to offer is quite common. And then if you get tantrics there, the tantrics who worship Shakti, either to get power or to get liberation from this world, and they engage in the most, I'm saying it's a secretive cult, but they engage in the most abominable activities. For instance, meditating on a corpse, because at the burning grounds, they cut a deal with the domes, the people who oversee that, and say, if someone leaves, if the body is burning, and the people leave, you pull out the body and give it to me. Because dead, fresh corpses are very popular with tantrics. They can sit on and meditate at night, preferably on Amavasya night. Amavasya is just is Ekadashi, right, in the dark. So don't try it out. Just come. You're gonna, it's very dark and fearsome. And anyway, on the Amavasya night, all the preets and bhutas and dakinis, and that's the time when they like to move around, and especially at the cremation ground, and drinking wine. If they get the opportunity, they'll. Goat blood they can get all the time, but if they get the opportunity, some human blood also. So they're not known to engage in murder per se. Having sex with a with a dead female body, that's one of their tricks also. Preferably of a chandali. So their whole idea is that well, there are two ideas. One idea, you have to remain undisturbed while you're doing all these things. You're supposed to feel no revulsion or pleasure. It's difficult to imagine how you could find pleasure in having sex with a dead body. But you shouldn't feel revolted by that also. And also when the all the ghosts come to attack you, which they will, obviously, if you're doing such things, then you have to be without fear. If you have fear, then they are finished. Then they destroy you. So it's a very dangerous kind of sadhana. But if you can perfect it, you can get all, you can bring all the ghosts under your control, and you can do all kinds of things. You can lord it over the world. But it's very dangerous, because either way, you go. If the ghosts take you over, then you suffer terribly, and you perform all kinds of sinful activities, extremely sinful activities at their behest. And you can do extremely bad things, and you lost control, but you still get the karmic reaction because you got yourself in that situation. But people risk doing that because then they can get so much power, and then they can enjoy. For instance, they can lure beautiful women and enjoy them. But they have to. There comes a time they have to die and leave that body. They have to suffer terribly. But that's typical of the Shakti worship. It's typical of material life, but it's at an extreme intensity that you know you're going to suffer, but you want to enjoy anyway. In Vedic culture, there's something for everyone, but it's a long way away from the pure Vaishnava religion. Previously in Bengal, there was lot of competition between the Vaishnavas and the Shaktas. Not exactly competition, but the Shaktas, they would persecute and ridicule the Vaishnavas. The Brahmins were mostly Shaktas. And we find in the life of Narottam Das how the Brahmins became outraged that he was giving initiation at all to anyone, because how Narottam could do that, because only Brahmins can give initiation according to their understanding. He was Kayastha, which technically is Shudra, although the Kayasthas are very intelligent and well placed. His father was king, large landholder. So they were outraged, and they continue to be outraged how the Vaishnavas, they don't care for all the rules and regulations of the Smriti. They're smartas. You follow all the rules and you get material enjoyment. And so the smarta cult is mixed up with the Shakti cult. And then the Shakti cult is also mixed up with the Tantric cult. And it's a big mess. But whatever it is, it's very different from the pure Vaishnav Dharma. Nowadays, we don't find so much animosity between the Shaktas and the Vaishnavas. Possibly because a Shakta made the philosophy, if you want to call it that, Jato Mat Tato Pat. It's all the same anyway. Which is not at all according to the Vaishnav understanding, which is a fact. And anyway, it doesn't make any sense from any point of view. All the paths, it's usually stated in English, all paths lead to the same goal. And it's true in one sense, as long as we're not in Krishna consciousness, because all paths lead to repeated birth and death. But then there is Krishna consciousness, which is different. And so we don't... Well, that's a major reason why we don't like to identify ourselves as Hindus. We don't want to ever say, oh yeah, you're Hindu. Okay, then... Okay, Krishna consciousness and worshipping Kali and worshipping Sai Baba, it's all Hindu. Yeah, no, we want to differentiate ourselves. We don't have anything to do with all this. This Shakti worship, which is it's at the margins of the Vedic culture. What to speak of Sai Baba, which is it's an appropriation of the Vedic culture. All the symbolism of the Vedic culture is taken and projected onto someone who is not a worshipable deity, should not be worshipped. Okay, I'll go on. No, well, shall I shan't do this? Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll say one thing more. In this regard, I'll read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 26, and some excerpts from Srila Prabhupada's purport, which are particularly relevant to this topic. As you know, the first canto, chapter 2 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it delineates Savaipung Sangparo Dharma, the highest dharma for all living beings, and gives some further delineation of that and how it should be practiced. And then after that, some extra instruction. Mumukshavo ghora rupan hitva bhuta patin atha narayana kala shanta bhajanti hyana suyavaha. Those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. So they're non-envious. The worshippers of Kali, they're actually envious. Envious of Shiva. They want to enjoy this material world, or they want to leave this material world. There may be some who want to leave this material world by Shakti Upasana. But they're envious of Krishna. Another way, this kind of worship of the mother, after all, she's the mother, right? You don't usually expect your mother to walk around with her head chopped off and her breasts exposed. In mostly the forms of Kali, and you'll find like that. Not the Kali, the Gaura Rupa, the terrible form. Not Durga, no. You'll find she's very nicely dressed. Very beautiful, very enticing. And that's a problem for those who worship her as mother. Then she may show herself to them, and they see such a beauty that they never imagined. And they become attracted to her. And when they approach her as mother and they become attracted to her, she destroys them. How can they desire to enjoy her? So the Vaishnavas, they're not envious. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that not envious means they don't decry that kind of, you can say I've been decrying it. Well, from our point of view, we're definitely not going to engage in it, but we know there is a purpose why that is there in Vedic culture. And these are forms of Kali. They're not imaginary forms. All these forms, the Chamundi and the Chandi, these are all actual forms, not that someone dreamed up of some imaginary gods like that. And there may be so many imaginary gods. In Buddhism, they dreamed up so many. In the Mahayana, they dreamed up so many imaginary gods. Even I was saying yesterday, the Virgin Mary, imaginary goddess. But what, as I understand it, when people start to worship some imaginary gods, like in Buddhism or imaginary Buddhas, Maitreya and Manjushri and all this, that what happened, they worship then the Supreme Lord and his representatives, they accept that worship through that form. Because when someone wants to reciprocate, then Mayaiva vihitan hitan. He reciprocates in some way or other. Anyway, so the Vaishnavas, they're not envious in the sense they realize people are at a certain level, and they're doing that. Although they try to bring them to the proper level. So anyway, in the purport of this verse, Srila Prabhupada writes, Kala Bhairav, Smashan Bhairav, Shani, Mahakali, and Chandika. Chandika is another form of the name Chandi, which is better known. These demigods are worshipped mostly by those who are in the lowest categories, or the mode of darkness or ignorance. So it's for them. Let them worship. There was this whole temple entry movement, Mahatma Gandhi. Let everyone be allowed to enter the temple. So it was allowed, but still, if you go to Tirupati or Sri Rangam, who will you find going there? It's not all the people. They have their own temples. They already had their own temples. The people who cut chickens and offer to various gods, they have their own temples, and the people who go to Ranganath and Tirumala, they don't go to their temples. No one's banning them, but they don't. And the people who cut chickens, they're not very interested to go to Tirumala anyway. So what was the point of it all anyway in the first place? Just some political thing, or trying to artificially make everyone equal. They won't want to go, or even just like the village here, even they think, we can't come, we shouldn't come, because we're eating meat, and we eat meat every day, and if we eat meat, we can't go to the temple. So they it's a different mindset, they're in a different level. And that's understood, but artificially they want to make everything equal. Anyway, continuing the purport. Other demigods like Brahma, Shiva, Surya, Ganesh, and many similar deities are worshipped by men in the mode of passion, urged on by the desire for material enjoyment. But those who are actually situated in the mode of goodness, sattva gun, of material nature, worship only Vishnu tattvas. Vishnu tattvas are represented by various names and forms such as Narayana, Damoda, Vamana, Govinda, and Adhokshaja. Highly qualified brahmanas situated in the mode of goodness have no grudges against the mode of worship of others. They have all respect for other demigods, even though they may look ghastly, like Kala Bhairav or Mahakali. They know very well that those horrible features of the Supreme Lord are all different servitors of the Lord under different conditions. Yet they reject the worship of both horrible and attractive features of the demigods, and they concentrate only on forms of Vishnu because they are serious about liberation from the material conditions. So we're not very interested in worshipping these various forms of demigods. And people may say, oh, why are you so fixated on Vishnu? You see the huge temples of Shiva. Yeah, there are huge temples, but it's a different purpose and different mentality to the temples of Vishnu. Another important thing in the temples of Vishnu, and actually in all temples, but especially Shugoan temples of Vishnu, is that people are supposed to come and hear and understand. Without that, there may be some sentiment for Vishnu. Just like in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya at the present time. You can probably say from your own experience growing up, that there's some sentiment for Vishnu, but there's no instruction. Which should be there. If you're born in a Brahmin family, then you get Upanayanam, and then you're instructed, actually not immediately in philosophy. First you have to learn at least one Veda, and philosophy comes afterwards, or the teachings, and the understanding. Nowadays, if someone wants to understand, they have to make their own effort to understand, but there's no effort made to propagate that. So without that, Ramakrishna becomes right, jata mat tato pat. It all merges into one big mess, one big khichdi. There's some, it's veg and non-veg altogether. There's some blood from Kali and tulsi leaf, and that's what they make of Hinduism. Unfortunate. The teachings must be there, otherwise everything is lost. And I'll get through to that, hopefully. Because one of the important tirthas, in some ways can be said the most important, is sadhus who carry us across. But that's coming up. I'll finish there now. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyascha patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.
Join us, Bhakti Kaswami Maharaj ki. Yeah.